So in this second session, I'd like to talk about faith as supernatural, but maybe we can start with an important spiritual point, because after all, these talks are supposed to be food for the mind and the whole soul. The mind is an important part of the soul, don't forget that. But God is perfectly simple. And by that, Aquinas means that God is perfectly one. There's no complexity in God. He's infinite, infinitely deep, much deeper than we can ever grasp or fully comprehend. But he's not complex. Complex there meaning with lots of different parts. We have lots of different parts. God is perfectly simple. It's very mysterious that, in fact, the whole complexity of the world comes from God, who is perfectly simple. So for Aquinas, the goal of our faith is not to know a bunch of complex truths, although sometimes we do have to really use our minds very rigorously, all the potential of our minds, to grasp what God is about, or what faith is all about. But ultimately, it's to know God who is perfectly simple. And that means that, in fact, the real work of the ascent of faith is growing in simplicity, by which I don't mean that we get rid of our possessions, although that we should do some of that. I mean, as a Dominican, that's part of our way of life. You take a vow of poverty, you simplify your life, you're able to concentrate on what's more essential. But I don't just mean simplicity in that sense. It means that spiritually we become more simple. In other words, our spiritual life, growing in the spiritual life, it's not about coming up with more spiritual practices or knowing more obscure mystical knowledge about God. It's about entering more and more into what we already know, what was already given to us in baptism, and which we often don't fully even advert to in our lives. It's shedding our complexity so that in our lives, God becomes the only thing, or the thing above all. I mean, maybe we shouldn't say the only thing, because you still have to worry about where your next meal is going to come from. But to enter more and more into that being the thing that your life is all about. The religious life, in a way, is supposed to be like this. That's part of why you step out of the busyness of the world and why you take a vow of poverty. And the goal is that in the end, our whole lives will be nothing other than saying, in the Holy Spirit, with Christ, Abba, Father. That is the whole thing. So faith, the life of faith, even though it involves a whole bunch of propositions, like we could list all the articles of the Creed, and trying to understand the terminology there might seem rather complicated, but in fact, the goal is that simple profession, which the Holy Spirit moves us to make. When we talk about our spiritual lives, then, growth in the spiritual life is not principally about, say, mystical experiences. Mystical experiences are great, and if you've had them, you've received a great gift from God. But they're not of the essence of the Christian life. They may be really helpful, but they're not of the essence. Some people, when they discern a religious vocation, or any vocation, really, may go through a period where they feel like God is really moving in their lives. Maybe you've experienced that in some way. Where you feel like God is really acting visibly, you know, tangibly, dramatically. And that's wonderful. But if you have those kinds of experiences and then say you enter the Dominican order, or whatever order, whatever religious form of life, you may then discover that you don't have very often those dramatic experiences after a while. Now, some people will talk about that as God going into hiding. The Carmelite tradition talks about that, for example. The Dominican or Thomistic tradition doesn't really talk about it that way. Why? Because the essence of God acting in us is not these extraordinary experiences. They get us moving. God sometimes needs to really give us a boost of grace to get us moving. And it's wonderful that he does it. But that's not the essence of the Christian life. The essence of the Christian life is growth in faith, hope, and love. And you got all of those when you were baptized. If you're in a state of grace, you have them now. The goal is to make them more actual. So you get them, in Thomistic terminology, you get them in potency. You get them as powers that you could be using. And what you want to be doing is more and more always actually be using them. Actually be knowing God in faith. Actually be loving him with your heart. Actually be trusting in him by the virtue of hope. The more you actually do that, the more you are being made like him. The likeness of God is made more and more actualized in you. And so the lives of the saints is this. Fundamentally, it's this. It's growing more and more in that actualization. So you can be a better Christian the more you allow your mind to ascend to God by making acts of faith, by saying little prayers to him. It's not just something that you do, you know, once a week when you come to Mass on Sunday. Certainly you should do it then. But the more you do it throughout your life, the more it will be what you are, a son or a daughter of God. This is supernatural. This is God working in your life. And he really does it. He really acts in our lives. And he really makes us like him through the theological virtues. And that's what faith is all about. And that's why it's not just a human act of believing. It is God making us divine. Aquinas says that. It's an extraordinarily audacious thing to say. That the supernatural theological virtues give us a sharing in the divine nature. And so this is what I was talking about in the last hour, about how faith gives us a participation in God's own knowledge of himself. That's why it has to be supernatural. It can't just be generated by us. So what I'd like to now spend some time doing is elaborating with a little more specificity just why faith is eminently reasonable. A lot of that we've already touched on. I'll just sort of systematize it briefly. And at the same time, it is essentially supernatural. And this is characteristically Dominican in the way you think about faith. There were other medieval traditions, the Franciscan tradition, which had a different approach to this. And in fact, the approach of St. Thomas Aquinas, or what came to characterize the Dominican approach, basically was canonized in the First Vatican Council. So it became, after that point, the standard Catholic teaching. Although in the Middle Ages there was a debate about it. But this is one of those cases where the Dominicans won the debate. So these sorts of questions about faith were very important in debates over, like, nature and grace, faith and reason, the use of philosophical arguments in theology. And really, faith as reasonable and supernatural is a key junction or a key kind of node in all of those controversies. So we could ask a series of questions like this. If we say faith is a reasonable act, and I hope you'd agree by now that it is a reasonable act, is it also a purely supernatural act? what is reasonable in that act, or what is the contribution of reason, and what is the contribution of supernatural grace? In what sense is faith infused by God into the believer's soul? Does God move me to believe, or do I move myself to believe? That's another very good question, and one that's hotly debated in the Middle Ages. And St. Thomas's answer is classic. So what are these? What are the elements of this? In 1257, 1258, Aquinas was teaching at the University of Paris. We have a Parisian here. He's probably been near the very site where Aquinas was teaching, on the left bank of Paris. And he lectured on a text that was well known in the Middle Ages, written by Boethius, on the Trinity, the De Trinitate of Boethius. And in those lectures on the De Trinitate, Aquinas outlines the relationship between faith and reason, and it's a kind of classic account of the relationship between faith and reason. And it was a burning question in the University of Paris in the 13th century, because there you had the rediscovery of these texts of Aristotle, and a new way of approaching rational argument, philosophical argument. And the big question was, how does this fit into the way theology was being done in the universities in the 13th century, which were very Augustinian or Platonic? And now you had these Aristotelian points of view being brought into dialogue with them. How to make sense of that? So Aquinas' starting point in articulating the relation of faith and reason is that God is the source of them both. That means God gives us the power of reason, and he gives us supernatural faith. And God cannot be the source of a contradiction or an error. Therefore, faith and reason must be compatible. So Aquinas has a serene confidence in reason, rightly so called, or rightly used. And he says reason will never be able to demonstrate, like with a rigorous philosophical proof, something contradictory to faith. In other words, we can do all of the scientific research we want. We should do all of the scientific research we want, because we know that if we're doing our science right, it will never contradict what faith teaches us, because God is the source of the very power of reason by which we are doing the science. So this is the great Catholic attitude towards science, and it's misunderstood, very misunderstood today. But really, the Catholic Church was a huge mover in getting scientific inquiry going. That's a story that's not often told. We have some people who are much more knowledgeable about science and astronomy and things than myself in the room. But did you know, just by way of interesting footnote, that the Vatican has the largest extant collection of meteorites? The Vatican has been collecting meteorites for hundreds of years to study the universe. And so we have this wonderful, I know the director of the Vatican Observatory. So the Vatican has an astronomical observatory, and this he's a fanatic about meteorites, and he can tell you all these things about meteorites. Fascinating man. So in the Catholic tradition, and especially for Thomas Aquinas, there is no hesitation to pursue scientific inquiry, because the light of reason comes from God. And also, even though what we learn by faith cannot be proven by science or by reason, so he does think that some of the things that we hold by faith are only knowable by faith, for example, that God is triune, believing those things are reasonable, and reason will never be able to contradict them. So reason can show that there are reasonable things to believe, and they will never be able to construct a proof that God could not be triune, for example. Are you following me so far? What makes these claims believable? Here Aquinas gives several overlapping reasons, and I've already touched on a few of them. To begin with, faith depends on certain truths that Aquinas thinks can be proven by reason, such as that God exists, that God is one, that he is the source of all that is, and things like that. Aquinas calls these the preambles of faith, or the preambula fidei. That's a phrase that he uses that the First Vatican Council will later talk about extensively. So he says that faith presupposes these truths and needs them, in fact, to be proven by reason. To use an analogy to this, if a human witness were to tell us something that we couldn't verify ourselves, like, for example, that what it's like to walk on the moon. Okay, there have been people who've walked on the moon and could tell you by their experience what it's like, but none of us can easily verify what they tell us because it's really hard to get to the moon. So if someone were to tell us about walking on the moon, we would want to verify that this guy has actually been there and has done it himself and therefore is a credible witness. In the same way, we would want to verify that God really exists and that he could speak to us. We believe that he is speaking to us. So, I mean, Aquinas doesn't have any doubt about whether God exists. You can believe that purely by faith, yes. But if you're going to be rigorous about grounding faith, you have to be able to prove that God exists, Aquinas thinks. And that's part of the preambula fidei. That's what reason contributes to what faith believes. Next, so this is the second reason why faith is reasonable, and we've already talked about this. Aquinas takes the definition of faith on a natural level to be to think with assent. That's what we were talking about before. You have a proposition and you assent to it, you believe it. Even though you don't necessarily see the reason for it, you do it by believing a witness. And then the third reason Aquinas thinks that faith is reasonable is because of the special signs or proofs that God gave to confirm the words of Christ and the apostles. These would be things like Christ's miracles, his resurrection, the miracles worked by the apostles. You could even add to it the whole witness of the church over 2,000 years, the fact that this institution continues to exist after 2,000 years, that it has a coherent body of teachings and things like that. Okay, these are all about faith as reasonable. What about faith as supernatural? So this is maybe the more important contribution of this part of the talk. That Aquinas understands faith to be properly supernatural is clear, for example, in the way Aquinas distinguishes infused theological virtues like faith. These are virtues that God gives to you in a supernatural way from infused moral virtues that God may also give you, but which you could have acquired by yourself. So, to give you an example of a moral virtue, we could probably make a list of the moral virtues, but one of these virtues would be temperance. This is something that anyone who's ever been on a diet has direct experience with, right? I sit down to eat. I am always tempted by the chocolate cake. I can never resist it. If you put chocolate cake in front of me, I'm going to eat it. Even though I know it's not on my diet, I just cannot resist. So to acquire the virtue of temperance means over time, slowly, by my own efforts, being able to resist the chocolate cake. That's the normal way we acquire the moral virtues. They're natural virtues. You could talk about it with respect to courage, too, or the other virtues. It is possible, however, for one day I sit down and the chocolate cake is in front of me and poof, God infuses into me supernaturally the virtue of temperance, and all of a sudden I can resist the chocolate cake in a way that I wasn't able to before. That does seem to sometimes happen to people, and particularly it's evident in the area of addictions. You find testimonies of people about the way faith changed their ability to resist the temptation to drink or to use drugs. It's also true with respect to chastity and pornography. People who have really fallen deeply into that can really be helped by God infusing in them the virtue of temperance so that they can start resisting those temptations, even though they haven't done the repeated actions that you normally would need to do to be able to resist those things. Okay, those are infused virtues. You see what I mean? God is giving it to you even though you haven't done normally, naturally, what you would need to do to have the virtue. But God gives it to you by grace. So a human being could be temperate naturally, and sometimes God gives it to you by infusion. So that is, in a certain sense, supernatural, but you see it's supernatural only in the way that it happened to come about in this case. Because you could have gotten it naturally. You see my point there? Is faith like that? Aquinas says, no, faith is not like that. Faith is also infused, but faith could not be acquired naturally. You can never, by your own natural acts, arrive at believing God in a supernatural way. So, in fact, faith is supernatural in a different way than just the way that it's brought about. It's what Aquinas would call essentially supernatural, not just accidentally supernatural in this particular case. It must be supernatural in order for it to be faith. So there, we could identify six ways that faith is essentially supernatural. So I'm just going to kind of go through them here and explain them briefly. The first is that faith proportions you to a supernatural end. That's God himself. It gives you now a sharing in God's own self-knowledge. Stuff you could not know from just investigating the world. God has to tell it to you. He has to reveal it to you. And in fact, he has to strengthen your intellect so that you can know it. So Aquinas speaks of that as a participation in the divinity by grace, such that we are made sharers in the divine nature. Okay, second point flows immediately from this. We've already sort of talked about that first point. Second point, you can't do that on your own. God has to do it by his action. That's by infusion. All right, the third point. When you receive infused faith, you receive something that Aquinas calls a light, a new supernatural light in your intellect that allows you to penetrate more deeply into the meaning of what God is revealing. So in the last session, we had a question about whether God just gives you information, like a human being gives you information. And there is an element of that, but there's more, and this is one aspect of the more. A human being could only tell you facts, and you would have to use the light of your own intellect to like figure out what it means. With faith, God also strengthens that intellectual light so that you grasp, you penetrate into the meaning of those things in a way that that your own natural intellect wouldn't simply be able to do. The fourth way faith is essentially supernatural for Aquinas. Its object is a divine object. You're not knowing other things like you know things in the world. We're not studying meteorites, which in a way come from the heavens, right? But a very different understanding of heaven than where God is. So when we are knowing God, we're not just knowing a physical object, we're knowing a divine person or divine persons, all three divine persons. And let's see, I'm just moving quickly here. The fifth point. A human being can only make an act of faith because God is moving you from the inside. Now, this is we can verify this just by reading the Gospels. Think about all the people in the Gospels, in the actual history, we read about them in the Gospels, who encountered Jesus and heard his preaching, even saw his miracles. There were a lot of people. Only some of them became his followers. Some of them did not become his followers. How do we account for that? I mean, the crowd is standing there. They're listening to his preaching. They see him heal, a leper or a paralyzed person. And some people in the crowd believe, and other people don't believe. And in fact, the people who didn't believe even went so far as to crucify him, ultimately. So a pretty strong negative reaction. What accounts for the difference? Is it just something about what they saw? No, they all saw the same thing. Aquinas says the only way we can ultimately account for that difference is that God was moving inside some people. He was giving them the Holy Spirit, and they cooperated with that gift of grace. And in other people, either they didn't receive that grace or they refused it when it was given. But it's ultimately the Holy Spirit moving in you that has to move you to faith, not just your own willing. Finally, so this is the sixth way. When the believer receives faith, you receive knowledge that is meant to burst forth into love. That's a very interesting expression, one Aquinas repeats often. And the reason he says this comes from actually a truth about the Trinity. If you know much about the Trinity, you know you have Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. The Father breathes forth the Holy Spirit, who is his word. And then the Father and the Son together spirate or breathe forth the Holy Spirit. So the principle of the word is a procession by way of knowledge or intellect. The Father speaks his word. And then the Father and the Son, in loving each other, breathe forth the Holy Spirit, who is love. So when Jesus comes into the world, he comes as the Word made flesh, and he breathes forth the Holy Spirit on the apostles, who is the Spirit of love. And in the same way, when you receive the gift of faith, it makes you like the Son, assimilates you to the Son himself, early or normally blossoms into loving God, which makes you like the Holy Spirit, who is the principle of love, or the loving person in the Trinity. So knowing God in faith normally should lead you to love God. As you know him and you see how good he is, you respond with love. And that is the most full way that in this life you are made like God. Because now you are not only made like God in general, but you have a likeness to the Son, who is the Word, and a likeness by faith, and you have a likeness to the Holy Spirit, who is charity, or love in person. So faith, for Aquinas, is absolutely reasonable, but it must be something much, much more than what reason can accomplish. It has to be God supernaturally acting in our souls to give us a share in the divine nature. And in that, he is remaking in us the fallen image, or the image that has been defaced by sin. This is a beautiful teaching about the work of restoration. God coming in the flesh, Jesus Christ, he comes like an art restoration expert, actually. He goes and he finds the work of art, that human creature, which has been defaced by sin and is covered over with grime. And he remakes that image by his grace. And so when God gives you the grace of faith and also charity, he is remaking you, healing in you the deformity of original sin and of your own personal sins, and making you once again like what he intended you to be from the beginning, which is the creature who can know him and love him as he knows and loves himself. And that is our ultimate destiny. That's what faith is doing in us. And that's why it cannot just be a natural act. It has to be God. It's God's work of image restoration in us.